All right, Rav Osei, good morning. Let us begin by thanking our Talmud Torah sponsors for the month of Tammuz. To thank Adam and Yudit Ben Zev for dedicating all the Shurim and Drashos in honor of their children, Jake, Serena, and Rosie. To thank our Week of Learning sponsors, Yehud and Jennifer Goodhart, for dedicating the learning this week in commemoration of the Yartzeit of Jennifer's father, Yishai Zalman Ben Lazar. And to thank our Dafyomi sponsor for today, Alan Wiseman, in memory of his mother-in-law, Mildred Newman Malka Bas Yitzchak Asher, Zichron Lebracha. We hope that in the merit of our Talmud Torah, all of the Neshamos will have an aliyah and the families a Nechama. And of course, with that, let us begin. We have an incredible daf ahead of us today, really incredible daf ahead of us today. We are picking up in Meretz Hashem. Today's daf is Samches. But we have a little bit of catch up to do in here, just a bit. We are starting on Samech Zayin Amud Beis 67B, and we're picking up. Let's just pick up from Tana Debei Rabbi Shmuel Azoel. Azazel Shemechapra Maisa Uzav Uzal. So it's pretty much right in the middle of the page. If you have on the left hand margin your Hagos Habach, it's pretty much right across from that. So Tana, the Bei Rabbi Shmuel, Azazel. Why is the Midbar? Remember again, we call this desert Azazel. Why is it called Azazel? Shemechaper Amaisa Uza VaAzoel. Because it has the seer is so powerful that it has the power to go ahead and atone for the sin of Uza and Uzal. Now, what is that referring to? If you look at Rashi, Uza VaUzal, Malochi Chabala Sheyardu LiEretz. Bimei Naama Achos Tuval Kain Vaalehem Neemar Vayiru Bnei Elokim Es Binos HaAdam Klomar Al Arayas Mechaper. So this is actually an interesting thing that the Torah in Bereishis discusses that the Bnei HaElohim or the Bnei HaElohim, depending on how you translate it, decided to go ahead and engage in immorality. So there is a narrative of fallen angels. And the narrative of fallen angels were literally malochim, who went ahead and decided that life in this world would be more exciting than life in the celestial sphere. And they came down and engaged in immorality. So the Gemara is saying that's the reference to Uza and Uzoel, were these fallen malachim. So the point that the Gemara is making over here is that the Seir is so powerful that it's mechaper even on Arayos. It's mechaper even on immorality, which is an incredible, incredible yisod. Because I will say, lest you think, you know, sometimes when you think about the power of the seer to be mechaper, we kind of think about the seer's ability to be mechaper on what we'll call lesser averos, right, or smaller infractions. But now the Gemara telling me that the seer is so powerful that it's mechaper, it atones even for adultery. So the Gemara goes weiter. Tana Rabbanan was a very, very beautiful braisa. Tana Rabbanan. So the Torah says as follows, quoting over here, the pasuk from Vayikra, Es mishpat haitasu, ves chukos haitishmoru lalachas b'mani yeshu alkechem. What is it? Es mishpat haitasu. Both say, mishpatim are what? Dvarim she'el male lo nichtavu, din hu sheikasvu. So we'll say, mishpatim are halachas, that even had HaKadosh Baruch Hu not stated them, intuitively I would have known them. Ve'eluhin, for example, Avodas Kochavim, idolatry, Gila Rais, immorality, Shvichos Damim, murder, Gezel, theft, Birchas Hashem, cursing God. So these are all examples of Averos, where even had the Torah not prohibited them, intuitively I would have understood that you cannot engage in these activities. As Chukos Haitishmoru, what do Chukos refer to? So the Gemara says, Dvarim Shasotan Meshiv Alehen. These are the things that the Satan whispers in our ear and says, come on, this is ridiculous, right? This is ridiculous. Why do you have to go ahead and do this? For example, Ve'elohim, Achilas Chazer, consumption of Chazer, Levishas Shatnez, wearing Shatnez, Chalitzas Yevama, the whole process of Chalitza, Taras HaMetzora, the purification of the Metzora. And I both say it's interesting. Why does it say purification of the Metzora and not purification of other people who are Tamei? Because remember, the Metzora has a weird purification process, right? The blood applications on the thumb, on the earlobe, on the big toe. Other situations, again, you go to the mikvah, you bring a karbon. Okay, I understand that. Metzora is a bit more complicated. Seir HaMishtaleach. And I both say, again, this is why this is being brought down. And what's another example? Seir HaMishtaleach. I both say, why is Seir HaMishtaleach something that the Satan whispers in my ear? Because I both say, does it make sense that you push a goat off the cliff and suddenly, as they say, Al is Git, right? Everything is good. Just push the goat off the cliff and it's mechaper even for ma'isa uza v'uzal, even for matters of immorality. Makes no sense. Totally counterintuitive. So the Gemara both say, it's interesting, by the way, what's missing from this list? What's missing from this list? This week's parsha, right? Paraduma. So it is interesting. It would appear that maybe part of the reason why Paraduma is not included in this is because if you look at these things, these are things that the Satan would say really have no rhyme or reason. Paraduma, at least, is in the general framework, sacrificial framework. It's in Karbanos. Okay. Paraduma is enigmatic in that it makes the Tame Tahar and the Tahar Tame. That's strange. But the process itself of a carbonic or a quasi-carbonic concept is not such an aberration. If you look at the rest of these things, right, Shatnez, I don't understand what I don't even understand like the rhyme or reason about it. Even again, even Chazri brings in your Kashrus, because the truth is the halachos of Kashrus are not initially intuitive. So again, the Gemara says, B'shema Tomar, Maise Tohim. So maybe you'll look at these things and you'll say, ah, this is foolishness. Tamulomer Ani Hashem. Therefore the pasuk says, I am God. Ani Hashem chakaktiv ve'im lecha reshus lahar herbahen. I am HaKadosh Baruch Hu who engraved these things, right? I am HaKadosh Baruch Hu who has solidified these obligations, and you have no reshus, you have no right, lahar herbahen, to go ahead and, little boy said, now, lahar her literally means like to question or to wonder about them. And I just want to point out over here something really dramatically amazing. On one hand, Yiddishkeit often gives us the license to question, and in fact even encourages us to question. Questioning is good, right? Questioning, remember, there'd be no innovation, there's no original thought, there's no intellectual progression without questioning. So that has always been part of our historical or our national dynamic. But the other side of that coin is an acceptance. It's an acceptance. What it means to be a Jew is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu says it, and I do it. And I do it. Whether it appeals to my conscience, whether it appeals to my isms, whether it appeals to my ashkafas, that's irrelevant. That's irrelevant. God is not here to fit into my agenda. My obligation is to fit my agenda into God. That's the job of a Jew, to follow the orders of the Ribono Shel Olam. And if HaKadosh Baruch Hu says it, I understand it, I don't understand it, Ani Hashem, I am HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and if I ask you to do something, you do it. So I just want to point out, it's this incredible dialectic. Question. Of course we should question. We should always question. We should always try to understand. But at the end of the day, my performance of mitzvos and my allegiance and my fidelity to HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not based on receiving the answers. I do what I do and I am who I am because HaKadosh Baruch Hu asks me for something and I stand ready to deliver. That's the hashkafa of the Jew. And that's the Gemara's highlighting over here. Whether it's Chukim, whether it's Mishpatim, Ribono Shel Olam, if you ask me to do something, I pledge to you to answer the call. Incredible Gemara. And Masav and Tami Begadus. Well, so remember again, the Mishnah said, we know that the person who takes the Sayer, his clothing becomes Tame. So the Gemara says, at what point in time does the Tumah begin? So remember again, we had a Machlokes in the Mishnah. But the Machlokes in the Mishnah, right? The first opinion said, the Tanakhama said, Mishiyatzachos lechomos Yerushalayim, as soon as you leave Yerushalayim. And then Rabbi Shimon said, after the goat is pushed off the cliff. So, okay, so it says the Gemara, Meimasai, Metami Begadim, Tanra Banan, Hamishalech Metami Begadim, Veino Shalech, Es Hamishalech Metami Begadim. So it's an interesting Raisa. It is only the individual who goes ahead and takes the goat, whose clothing becomes Tameh, but what the Gemara calls the Sholeach Es HaMishaleach, the one who sends, the one who takes the goat. Now, both say, now, who is that? If you look at Rashi, HaSholeach Es HaMishaleach, HaMelavim Osam Yushalayim. Remember again, both say, what was the last Mishnah? The Mishnah that we just spoke about was that Miyakir Yushalayim, people used to escort, the Ish-Iti out. So it's only the Ish-Iti himself who becomes Tameh. But the people who escort him do not become Tameim. Yachol Mishiyatza Chotz Lachom HaZazara. You might have thought that as soon as the Ish-Iti leaves the confines of the Beis HaMikdash, he should become Tameh. Tamulomer HaMishaliach. So maybe you'll think again, if you just based on the word Mishaleach, maybe he only becomes Tamei once he gets to the Tzuk, which Rabbi Yossi means, we see, Tzuk is used in two ways. Tzuk could mean the desert, but here in this context, it means the cliff. The cliff. So the Gemara says, Tamlor, Vab Mishaleach, Hakeitzad, Mishi Yatza Chutz the Chomas Yishan Div Rabbi Yehuda. So Rabbi Yehuda holds that Allah Chalamayin, so the Tumah devolves upon the Yishiti as soon as he leaves Yerushalayim. Rabbi Yossi Omer Azazel v'chibes. The pasuk says Azazel v'chibes. Right, we'll get to Azazel. The Gemara says Ad sheyegia l'tzuk. You only become tamei once you get to the cliff. Rabbi Shimon Omer v'mishaleach es haseir la'azazel yichabes begadav zarko beba rosh zarko bebas rosh umetamei begadin. Ultimately, I'm going to say he throws it. Now it's interesting. Bebas rosh bepashtus means, right? He throws it head first. He throws it head first. Mutame begadim, and at that point in time, it becomes tame begadim. So we'll say there isn't machlokas about how you throw the sair off the cliff. Because if you remember, getting yesterday's daf, right? We saw backwards. So actually, backwards, so that I could see the. The string. The string also backwards, because Bipashtos, that goat's going nowhere. If it sees someone came over to me in the shir yesterday and told me that goats have excellent traction. First thing I asked them is, how do you know that? Right? It sounds like you're making that up. But all right, but anyway, it makes a lot of sense. Right? So he said to throw a goat off the cliff head first. But in any event, it's a machlokas. It's a machlokas which way you're throwing the goat off. And I will say again, the way the Rambam paskins is that halacha l'maisa, we paskin like the Tanakhama and the Mishnah, namely that Tumah devolves upon the individual. Mishiyatza chutz l'chomas Yerushalayim. As soon as you leave the Choma, as soon as you leave the walls of Yerushalayim, ultimately, again, Tumah devolves upon the individual. I will say now, I'll point out something interesting over here. Actually, you know what? I'll save it. I'll come back. I'll come back because we're going to make one more reference to the string turning white. So I'll share with you an idea when we get to that. Let's go to the Mishnah. Says the Mishnah. So continuing, we get the Kohen Gadol. So remember again, at this point in time, the Ish Iti is doing his thing. So remember, as soon as the Ish, what's interesting to note is as follows. The Ish Iti leaves Yerushalayim and he's on his way to Azazel. The Shaila now is like, what is the Kohen Gadol doing inside of the Beis HaMikdash? So here we go. Balo eats al par v'soyer hanisrafim. So we'll say the Kohen Gadol comes back to the par and the soyer, which are going to be burned. Now remember again, only thing he's done with the par and the soyer so far is what? Is sprinkled the blood. Right? Remember again, we've had three applications. In the Kodesh HaKadoshim, in the Kodesh, onto the paroches, onto the curtain, and on the Mizbeach HaZav, onto the golden altar. What do you do with the remainder of the blood? Poured out by the Yisod. Okay, but we haven't touched the animal carcasses, the animal bodies themselves. So now we're going to discuss what we do with the actual animals themselves. So Bado Itzel Par Visar Hanisrafin, he comes ultimately again to the Par and the Sayer. Karan, he cuts it open. Votzias Emerin takes out the sacrificial parts. Nastan Bemagis puts them in a bowl. Vehik Tiran Agabe HaMizbeach and burns them on the Mizbeach. So the sacrificial parts themselves are burnt in the Mizbeach. Kalan Bimiklos. Here's what's interesting. It's only the sacrificial parts that are burnt on the Mizbeach. The animals themselves are actually burnt outside of Yerushalayim. So how do you transport the animal? Kala means they would braid. So if you could imagine, they would take the animal body, and it was still intact, and wrap it around a pole, one pole for the para, one pole for the sayer, and they would carry it out to a place that they called the Beis HaSreifa. Beis HaSreifa is an area outside of Yerushalayim where they would go ahead and burn these animals. And from what point in time do the clothing of the people who transport the animals become tamei? In this case, Rabbi says, as soon as you leave the wall of the Beis HaMikdash, you become tamei. Rabbi Shimon Omer, Mishiyatzis Ha'ar Berubin. Rabbi Shimon says, no, when we become tamei by the Beis HaSreifa, after the fire has taken hold of the majority of the carcass of the animal. So it says the Gemara, Viktira Sakadaitla. So remember again, when you read the Mishnah, the way the Mishnah sounds like is, the kohen goes over to the par and the seir, right? He cuts it open, takes out the sacrificial parts, puts it in a bowl, and then offers it up on the Mizbeach. So it sounds like it's being offered up on the Mizbeach right now. Now, we'll say now, in fact, we know that that's not the case. It's actually not offered up on the Mizbeach until later. So why does it say that it's being offered up now? To which the order says, Ela'ima lahak tiran al gabi ha-Mizbeach. No, no, no. What it means is, you take the sacrificial parts, you put it in a bowl in order to offer it up on the Mizbeach, but you're not actually offering it up on the Mizbeach just yet. Says the Gemara, Kalan b'maklos, you go out and you take the animal, and you braid it on the poles. Says the Gemara, Amra b'yochran k'min k'liya, like a braid. So also what that would just mean is, I guess you would just take the limbs and kind of intertwine them in order to lock them onto the, in order to fasten them to the pole. Tana, lo haya menaskman nituach basar ola, ela or agabe basar. So also here's what's interesting. When going ahead and transporting the par and the soyer, you would not flay it. You would not flay it, right? So in other words, it's very interesting. So by an ola, for example, before you go ahead and dismember the animal, you would go ahead and flay it. Here, you do not flay the animal before dismembering it. So the Gemara says, Minahani Mili. So we're going to spend a little bit of time focusing on this idea. So Minahani Mili, from where do I know that I don't flay it before I dismember it? So the Gemara says, Desan Yerebi Omer, Ne'emar Kan Aru Basar Uperesh. It says over here, Or, which means skin, basar, flesh, peresh. Peresh, also literally means waste, right? The waste that's trapped inside the body. Ve'emar lahalon, and it says over there, basar, the over there, if you look at the last Rashi, ne'emar be'par koin mashiach. So we'll say par koin mashiach is the situation where the kohen gadol goes ahead and issues an erroneous ruling, and he himself acts on that ruling, and as a result commits an avera. So no one else acted on it; he just acted on it himself. And halacha lemaisa again is a particular carbon he has to bring as part of his process of tshuva. As part of the process of tshuva, look at the last Rashi. V'nemar bepar koyim mashiach aru basu uperesh ves or hapar ves kol besaro al rosh afan. So the Gemara says it says over here by Yom Kippur by the par and soir it says or basu uperesh. And it says, by the par koin gadol, or what we call the par koin mashiach, or basar umperesh, the Gemara says, tab of samaches, ma lahalon ayide nituach velo ayide hefshit. So we'll say, by the par koin mashiach, you have to dismember the animal, the sacrificial animal, but you do not flay it. Afkan ayide nituach velo ayide hefshit. So to over here, by the par and sa'ir of Yom Kippur, you will go ahead and dismember it, but you will not flay it. I have a hasam another. We'll say, by the way, where do you know by the par koin mashiach that you do not go ahead and flay the animal before dismembering it? Tisanya vikirbo pirsho vahotzi v'lamid shemotzi shalim. So we'll say, because the pasuk says literally again, it's inside its waste you shall take out. That teaches me that the animal is removed intact. Malame shemotzi shalim. Therefore, again, the Torah tells me that the par koy mashiach is taken out. Remember, because the par koy mashiach, like the par in the Sar of Yom Kippur, has its sacrificial parts offered up on the Mizbeach, but then the animal itself is burnt in the Beis HaSreifa. When the animal is taken out, it's taken out intact. So we'll say, now what does that mean? So we'll say, here's what's interesting. Remember, when you read the Mishnah, if you were to read, let's pause for just a moment. If you read our Mishnah, how do you assume the par and the Sar are being burned? Whole. Right, it's because remember the Mishnah makes no reference to flaying or to dismembering. The Gemara points out we're going to learn out everything from the par koin mashiach. When you look at the pesukim by par koin mashiach, it sounds like that halacha lemaisa, the animal is, so we know that the animal is taken out whole, meaning so they shech the animal in the Beis HaMikdash, sacrificial parts are offered up on the mizbeach, and now the animal itself is taken out to the Beis HaSreifa. Now we know, Aleph, it's taken out whole. Yachol Yisrafenu Shalim, you might have thought, therefore, it's burnt whole as well. Ne'emar kan rosho ukrov, v'ne'emar lahalon rosh ukraim. So we'll say, it says over here, by par koin mashiach, literally again, it's head and its legs, and it says, by carbon ola, it's head and its legs as well. Ma lahalon ayidini tuach, just like by ola, the animal is dismembered before it is burnt. Afkan ayidei nituach. So too over here, by parkoin Mashiach, the animal is dismembered before it's burned. Ay imal lahalon ayidei hefshit. Afkan ayidei hefshit. But one second, the ola rabot side before it's dismembered is also flayed. So maybe just like the ola is flayed, so too the parkoin Mashiach should be flayed as well. Tamud lomar v'kirba uparsho. So we'll say ma tamud. What does that drasha mean? V'kirba uparsho. Amra papa kishem shepirsho v'kirba. To teach you that the same way that the waste is contained in the body, kach bisaro ba'oro, so too the flesh is contained in the hide, i.e. the hide is not removed. So both say, so essentially what comes out is as follows, that we learn out from Parakoy and Mashiach, that halacha l'maisa, an animal is dismembered before it is burnt. But ultimately, again, the Parakoy and Mashiach, unlike the Ola, is not flayed before being dismembered. And then we learn out the Par and Sa'ir of Yom Kippur from the Parakoy and Mashiach. And therefore, halacha l'maisa, what we are being taught is that although the animal is taken out whole to the Beis HaSreifa, it is in fact dismembered before it is burnt. It is burnt limb by limb. But halacha l'maisa, it is not flayed before it is dismembered. Incredible. Good. So we'll say from what point in time, remember again, the people going ahead and carrying the parah and the sawyer, they become tameh. When does their clothing become tameh? So the Mishnah said, once again, it was a machlokas. Tanakama said, as soon as you leave the wall of the Azara, and Rabbi Shimon said, as soon as the fire kind of takes hold of the carbon. So says the Gemara, Tan Rabbanon, Yotzi al michutz l'machane v'sarfu. The pasuk says you shall take it out, outside of the camp, and ultimately go ahead and burn it. So the Gemara says, Lahalon atanosin lahem shalosh machanos. So we'll say, ultimately, again, by parkoin gadol, you give them three machanos. And we'll say, what that means is, remember, often this lashon of three machanos really comes from our arrangement in the desert. Remember, again, there was machane shechina, that's where the Mishkan was. There was Machane Levia, that's where the Leviim camped around. And then there was Machane Yisrael, where everyone else camped around. So again, in Eretz Yisrael, we also have Shalosh Machanos. The Beis HaMikdash is Machane Shechina, Harabayis is Machane Levia, and Yerushalayim is Machane Yisrael. So when we speak about the idea, Yotzi al Michutz LaMachane, by the Par Kohen Gadol, that means you take the Par outside of the three machanos, which means that the par is burned outside of Yerushalayim. They can atanosin lahem machana achos. But we'll say, maybe over here, you only, meaning by the par inside of Yom Kippur, maybe you only have to give them one machana. In other words, maybe the par and the sar only have to be burnt outside of the Beis HaMikdash itself. Maybe you don't have to go out of Yerushalayim. Im kein, lama ne'amar michutz l'machane. If that's the case, then why does the Torah use lashon michutz l'machane? Lomar lecho, kevan sheyatzu chutz l'machane, achos, tzmeim begadim. To teach me that halacha l'maisa, as soon as you leave the Beis HaMikdash, i.e. the chomas ha'azara, the wall of the Beis HaMikdash, the person taking the parnasariah becomes tamei, tumas begadim, v'hasam minalan. And we'll say ultimately again, where do we know that the parakohen gadol is burnt outside of the gimel machanos, the sanya, because we learned, v'hotzias kol ha-par, the pasuk, you shall take out the entire par, chutz l'shalosh machanos, it means you take the entire par out of all three machanos, right? So meaning you burn it outside of Yerushalayim. Ata omer chutz l'shalosh machanos, well, how do you know? How do you have to take it out of all three camps? Maybe you only have to take it out of one. But remember again, if we say you have to take it out of one, so where would you be burning it? Right outside of the Beis HaMikdash, right? On Har HaBayis, outside of the Beis HaMikdash. Kishu Omer bepar ha'ida al michutz l'machane. When it says, well, say by the par ha'ida, which again, par ha'ida is the par that's offered up when Klal Yisrael followed an erroneous ruling. Right. So it doesn't have to say michutz l'machane. Why? Shari kvar ne'emar v'saraf oso kasher saraf es ha'par harishon. The pasuk says you shall burn it just like you burnt the original par. Uma tamul lomar el michutz l'machane. So why does the pasuk have to say el michutz l'machane? Litein lo machane shnia. To go ahead and tell you that you have to take it out of a second camp. Ukishu omer michutz l'machane bedeshen. And then when it says ultimately again that you have to to go ahead and take it out of the camp, ultimately again, by the Trumas Hadashan, Shein Tamalomar, because that phrase is unnecessary. Shari Kvar Ne'amar, El Shefach Hadashan Tein Lo, El Shefach Hadashan, Tein Lo Machan Ashlishes. That comes to teach me, ultimately again, that there is the need to go ahead and remove it from a third camp as well. What does Rabbi Shimon do with this phrase? Rabbi Lozer Omer, it says, just like over here, it means you remove the item from all three machanos. Af lahalon. Chutz legimol machanos. So to over here, out of all three machanos, umal lahalon b'mizrach ashe Yishalayim. Just like I will say over here, we burn the carbon on the eastern side of Yerushalayim. I'm sorry, afkan b'mizrach ashe Yishalayim. So to over here, halach lamaisa, we burn it on the eastern side of Yerushalayim. V'rabanan. Heichan sarif lehu. It was according to the Rabbanon, ultimately, again, where is the carbon burned? So the Gemara says, Kidisanya, we learned Heichan nisrafin, ultimately, again, where are carbonos that are taken out, burned? So the Gemara says, Litzafona shal Yerushalayim. It's burned, ultimately, again, to the north of Yerushalayim, v'chutz l'shalosh machanos, and outside of all three machanos. Rabbi Yossi says, Abes hadeshen nisrafin. So Rabbi Yossi says, the carbonos are burnt by the base Hadesh. And I will say, now, what is this a reference? So if you look at Rashi, it's Tap Rashi, base Hadesh, and Tzarech Shiyaktim L'Shem Deshen HaMizbeach. So I will say, here's what's interesting. Remember again, Trumas Hadesh and removal of ash is the first avoda that is done in the morning. Now remember, Trumas Hadesh itself normally just requires from ash from the top of the Mizbeach to what? To be brought to the bottom of the Mizbeach. You're actually not taking it out anywhere. Well, we've learned already before that halacha l'maisa, once the ash pile on top becomes too intense or becomes too overwhelming, then in fact we do begin to go ahead and take it out. So the Gemara says, here's what's interesting, that for these karbanos that are, and when we take it out to what we call the Beis HaSreifa, which was an area outside of the Gimel Machanos, outside of Yerushalayim. So what the Gemara is pointing out is something very interesting. Rabbi Yossi says that in general, whenever you have a carbon that has to be burned outside of Yerushalayim, you are supposed to burn it in what's called the Beis HaDeshen. Now, listen, now what's the Beis HaDeshen? The Beis HaDeshen is a place in which you deposited the ash. Where is the Beis HaDeshen? Where is it? Wherever you deposit the ash. Right? So there's not a particular geographic location. It's just wherever you end up depositing the ash outside of Yerushalayim, that becomes now known as the Beis HaDeshen, and that's where you have to go ahead and burn any of the other karbanos that require mechutz legimol machanos. So the Rabbi Yossi Omer, a Beis HaDeshen is Rafin. Omer Rava, man tanu depalakali Rabbi Yossi, who is the tanu argues Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov. It's Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, the Sanyo, Al Shefach HaDeshen Yisarif. The pasuk says, to the Shefach HaDeshen, you will burn the animal there. Shehei L'Sham Deshen, L'Shem Deshen, or Shehei L'Sham Deshen. It should be the place, ultimately, again, where the Deshen was deposited. So we'll say, there are two things going on over here. Number one, it appears that the consensus opinion is building, that Halacha L'Maaseh, whenever you're burning something outside of the Beis HaMikdash, you're burning it, ultimately, Michutz L'Shalosh Machanos. I will point out, by the way, the notable example to that is what? Actually, once again, this week's parashas Paraduma, right? Paraduma is only burnt michutz lamachana achos, right? I take that back. It's really Paraduma is burnt in Yerushalayim, but remember again, it's not burnt in the Beis Hamikdash, nor is it burnt on the Harabayis, right? It's burnt across the valley on Harazesim. But lamaisa again. Any other time you're burning sacrificial animals, the par kohen gadol, to the para eid, to the par nisav yom kippur, you're burning it michutz l'shalosh machanos. You're burning it outside of all three camps, outside of Yerushalayim. What Rabbi Yossi is now introducing is, by the way, whenever you have to burn something, so burn it in what we call the makom beis hadashen, the place where you deposited the ash. Where is the place where you deposit? Where is that? Wherever you deposit the ash. But the idea is, Rabbi Yossi seems to be saying that halacha l'maaseh, so once you're burning something, michutz legimol machanos, burn it in a place that apparently like is already vested with some level of sacrificial sanctity. You've already deposited the ash there. Okay, so the Gemara goes back to Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, Omer, shehei makomo meshupach. So I will say it's very interesting that the place nichutz de gimel machanos where you're going to go ahead and burn the carbon should be a makom meshupach. So I will say makom meshupach literally means a slanted area, a slanted area. The Gemara says, "Amar le Abaye v'Dilma b'mekomo meshupachu d'pligi." Maybe ultimately, again, this in and of itself is the point of contention. That Allah Lamaisa, are there any like topographical obligations for this place or topographical criteria for the place in which you're going to burn the carbon chutz l'machaneh? It's interestingly enough, Rabbi Elazar seems to say we want a makom meshupach, a slanted area. Right? I guess things could slide off a little bit easier. So again, that could be the source of machlokas as well. Good. Ten Rabbanim. So we'll say now we go back to the Braisa. We'll say, bottom line, by the way, halacha l'maisa, we paskin that the par and the sa'ir are burnt michutz legimol machanos. So they are burnt outside of the Beis HaMikdash, outside of Yerushalayim, excuse me, but the Tumas Begadim sets in as soon as you leave the Chomas HaAzara. So as soon as you leave the wall of the Beis HaMikdash, there's Tumas Begadim, but the carbon itself is halacha l'maisa, burnt outside of all gimol machanos. Good. Ten Rabbanim. V'hasoreif. Vasorif. So we'll say the pasuk says the one who burns the carbon hasorif mitame begadim velo hamatzis es haar. So we'll say interestingly enough, who is the one who becomes tame? Only the one who actually burns the carbon. Now, as opposed to velo hamatzis es haar, not the one who lights the fire, velo hamesaders hamaaracha, not the one who sets up the pyre of wood. So we'll say this is very interesting. Remember again, to burn the part in the Sa'ir takes a village, right? You need a group of people. So you might have thought that everyone who participates in the burning of the part in the Sa'ir maybe becomes Tameh. Maybe that's what happens. Kamash Malon, no, the Gemara says, only the individual who actively burns the par. And Shabbos said, Bepashtus means the person who places the limbs on the fire, stokes the fire, that's the person who's going to become Tameh. But the guy who goes in and lights the fire, or the guy who sets up the pyre, they are not going to be Chayiv. So the Gemara says, Ve'ezu ha-Soreif, who is the Soreif, right? What's the definition of the Soreif? Zeh ha-Meseya b'shas Sreifa. That's anyone who goes ahead and aids in the burning of, Meseya literally means helps, anyone who aids in the burning of the sacrificial limbs. So the Gemara says, Yachol, Af Mishanasu Efer. So let's say, now what's interesting about this is as follows. So what this does sound like is, you know, let's say Reuven's the one who places the limbs on the fire. So clearly, again, he's going to become Tameh. And then Shimon comes along and what's he about to say? You know, when you burn sacrificial, anytime you burn sacrificial pieces, you need to what? You need to like move it around. You need to move it around. So it sounds like over here that Halacha L'maisa, if Shimon were then to come along and let's say turn over the limbs so it burns faster, that Shimon would be Tameh as well. Anyone who is engaged in the active burning of the limbs will become Tameh. So this is interesting. Yachal af mishenasu efer. We'll say, what about if you aided in the burning after it already became ashes? So let's say again, the limb already became ashes, and right, Reuven put it on the fire, the limb already became ashes, then Shimon comes along and moves the ashes around. So you might have thought that Shimon becomes Tameh. So the Gemara says, Osam. Therefore the pasuk says, Osam. It is only when the limbs are in existence, right? Only when the limb is a limb, right? Only when there is sacrificial basar that ultimately, again, it conveys tumah. But once it turns to ash, even if you do something about it or do something to it, halacha lemaisa, there's no tumas begadim in that situation. The Gemara says, Rabbi Lazar, Rabbi Shimon Omer, hapar mitame, mitach habasar einu mitame. So this is very interesting. So Rabbi Shimon says, the par, the limbs themselves, are what convey tumah. In other words, we'll say, when we say the limbs, meaning that when you go ahead and you put the limbs on the fire, or for that matter, again, manipulate the limbs on the fire, that's when there's tumah. Nitach ha-basar, eino matame begadim. I will say now, in this context, you know, beforehand, the word nitach meant, what was the word? Dismembering, right? Dismembering. Here, right, Rashi points out that the word nitach means decomposed. Decomposed. So what happens again if the limbs became decomposed? Nitach habasar, Ain't no matan begadim. So I will say, this is very interesting, because Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Shimon says as follows. The only time that halacha lamaisa, the limbs convey tumah, is when you're manipulating the limbs, existing limbs on the fire. But once the limb decomposes, even though again it's still extant, in other words you can still see it, halacha lamaisa doesn't convey tumah. Now I will say, so it appears that we have a machlokis over here, because remember again, in the first statement in the Gemara, first statement in the Braisa said, whoever goes ahead and places the limb or manipulates the limb on the fire ultimately becomes Tamei Tumas Begadim. But then the Mishnah said, the Braisa says that what? Once the limb become ashes, if you manipulate it, then what? You don't contract Tumas Begadim. Yet, Rabbi Elazar Shimon comes along and says, once the limb has decomposed, you no longer contract Tumas Begadim. So it appears that there's a machlokas. So the Gemara says, "My benayu, what's the practical difference between these two opinions?" I'll tell you. Ike benayu, the shavya charucha. Both say, "What happens after the limb is just a charred, a charred block of flesh? Does it convey tumas begadim if you go ahead and manipulate it or move it while on the fire?" According to the first opinion on the bright, so the answer would be yes, because according to the first opinion, the meat conveys tumas begadim until when? Until when? It's reduced to ash. However, according to Elazar Rabbi Shimon, the answer would be no, because once essentially it's reached the stage of decomposition, then halacha lemaisa, it conveys tumas begadim. So we'll say, so an interesting machlokes, until what point in time the part of the sarah convey tumas begadim. The Rambam paskins like the first opinion in the Braisa, namely that halacha lemaisa, the meat of the part of the sarah, the flesh, will convey tumas begadim until it is reduced to ash. So whoever manipulates that on the fire until it becomes ash contracts tumas begadim. Incredible. So we'll say back to the Kohen Gadol. This is really fascinating. Amru lo the Kohen Gadol. So we'll say, so now remember again, they say to the Kohen Gadol as follows. Higia sa'ir le midbar. They tell the Kohen Gadol, good news. The Sa'ir has reached the Midbar. The Seir Mishdayach has reached the Midbar. So the Gemara says, by the way, Minayin, first of all, before we do that, look at Rashi. Amru lo Kohen Gadol, She'ino Rashi lahaskal ba'avod acharis ad she'egiya Sa'ir lemidbar. She'namar v'shilachas ha'Sa'ir b'midbar. V'achar kach, v'eschil v'achatas yakim v'zyechas. So also, I want to point out something very interesting. Before the Mishnah said, he goes over to the part of the Sa'ir, he cuts it open, takes out the sacrificial parts, and remember, he puts it in a bowl. But the Gemara made it very clear that what didn't he do yet? He did not offer it up on the Mizbeach. Why not? You cannot offer up the sacrificial parts of the part of the Sa'ir until you know for sure that the Ish Iti reached the Midbar. He's got to reach the Midbar, because that's the progression of the Pesukim. So the Mishnah now says, they would tell the Kohen Gadol, by the way, the Ish Iti, he reached the Midbar. Good news, he reached the Midbar, and therefore you could continue with the burning of the sacrificial parts. The Mishnah says, by the way, Minayin Hayu Yodin Shegiya Sa'ir LeMidbar. How do you know that? How do they know? Remember again, it was to be pointed out, it's about 6 miles away. How did they know that he reached the midbar? So the Gemara says, "Dir kos hayu osim umanifin bisudarin v'yodin shegiya se'er the midbar." So they had dir kos. We'll say, "What are dir kos?" Look at Rashi. Dir kos bnei adam omdim Yerushalayim l'tzuk. They had individuals. They had individuals ultimately again who stood from Yerushalayim omdim Yerushalayim l'tzuk. So individuals who were stationed between Yerushalayim and the tzuk and the cliff. And what would happen? Bichtei shiira as simano shalzeh umanifin osa smucha the midbar besudarin v'zeh samuch lo roa umenif kamhu v'roa chaveiro hasamuch li yushalayim dirkos. Suppose listen to this. They wave flags. They had a bunch of people set up between Yerushalayim and the cliff. And we're going to see actually doesn't even have to go all the way to the cliff. And essentially, again, they would wave a flag. One guy would wave a flag. And again, they would set off a wave of flags until they saw in Yerushalayim that ultimately the individual had reached. He had reached the midbar. So the Gemara says, "V'yodin shegiya se'er lemidbar." On Rabbi Huda, "V'alo simen gadol hu miYerushalayim v'al beis chaduro shlosh minyan." So Rabbi Huda says, the truth is, there's an easier way not to rely on flags, right? What was the easier? I will say, from Yerushalayim v'al beis chidudo shlosh minyan. So we'll say, in general, to get from Yerushalayim to the beginning of the desert. Rosh Elul means the beginning of the desert. So to get from Yerushalayim, from the Beis HaMikdash, or from Yerushalayim, I should say, to the beginning of the desert was a distance of 3 mil. 3 mil. So we'll say, what would they do? Holchin mil. Now remember again, in the last Mishnah, we already learned that what? That people would escort the Ish-Iti for a mil. So they would escort him out a mil. And then what? V'chozrim mil. They would then have to walk back a mil. V'shohin kidei mil. And then they would wait the amount of time that it takes to walk a mil. So we'll say, in other words, what Rabbi Hud is saying is, you don't need flag wavers. There's a pretty easy way to just understand that we know how much time it takes. It's a distance of 3 mil. We know how long it takes to walk 3 mil. So there are already people escorting the Ish Iti 1 mil. So they're going 1 mil, coming back another mil. So that's already 2 mil. If we just wait the amount of time that it takes to walk a third mil, we can be confident that ultimately, again, the Ish Iti has already reached the Midbar. But I'll say, it's interesting. The Yodin Shegiya Ser the Midbar. And ultimately, again, we know that the Sotir got to the Midbar. So we'll say, it is interesting that Rabbi Yehuda would say that pretty much you could rely on an estimation. In other words, we'll say, remember, the beauty of the flag approach is what? Is what? Right? You know definitively. Right? First of all, we'll say two things. You know definitively what time, right? What, when? And also, you know definitively, and also, again, everyone knows when you're traveling with a goat, so many things could come up, right? It's so much stuff. Bathroom stops, right? Different things like that. Who knows what has to happen with a goat, right? So it's interesting that Rabbi Yehuda pretty much allows you just to operate based on a calculation of time, which is really fascinating. Maybe you build in a cushion, right? I don't know, right? But it is interesting that Rabbi Yehuda just allows you to operate based on estimation of time, whereas the Tanakhama will say, why do you have to rely on estimations? We could set up a system that explicitly tells you when the goat arrives. And as we will say, it's not such a big distance that you can't figure out a way to definitively know when the Sa'ir has reached the Midbar. It's just not such a big deal. Let's say, in general, it's interesting that there are times in life where you kind of have to make an educated guess, and there are times in life when you could actually make decisions based on real information. And too many times in life, we make educated guesses when we could actually go ahead and get real information. Let's say, you know what this comes up more often than not? Is in the realm of relationships, right? How many times does it happen that we do things based on what we think other people are feeling? Or we do things based on why we think other people are doing the things the way that they do? And instead, there's a much simpler answer, which is ask. 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 How are you feeling? Right? I think I know how you feel. How are you feeling? Why did you do that? Why are you acting that way? How did this make you feel? And instead of going ahead and acting in relationships based on guesses and estimates and approximations, we could actually be explicit. And it's amazing how much more shalom there is in relationships when people are actually explicit with their feelings, where people are explicit with their intentions, and when people don't rely on guesstimates but actually talk things out. So it's just fascinating over here why Rabbi Yehuda, but again, I will say, the beauty of Rabbi Yehuda's position is, on one hand, what is a guesstimate also becomes its own self-contained process. And as Rabbi Yehuda said, there is a certain beauty of setting up a process that is not dependent on people. Right? Because Klal Gadol is anytime you don't have to depend on people, it's generally better off. So the beauty of Rabbi Yehuda's model is you don't have to rely on anyone. You start to watch, right? I know when the Ish Iti leaves, I know how much it takes to walk 3 mil, and then again, I'll set my alarm by that, and then I'll be ready to do the avodah. So again, pros and cons to both. So what's that? The Gemara says, but I don't understand Rabbi Shmuel Omer, Valo Simin Acharhu. Ayalahen. Rabbi Shmuel says, I don't understand. There's a different way for the Kohen Gadol to know when the Ish Iti reached the Midbar. What's the way to know that, Rabbi Hussein? The Gemara says, Lashon shel zahoris hayakasha pisa shel heichal. There was a white string, or a red string, I should say, that was strung up by the entranceway of the Beis HaMikdash. Ukeshe gia sa'ir la Midbar. And when the sa'ir reached the desert, haya halashon malbin, the string would turn white. Ultimately, again, if your sins will be like crimson red, they will be whitened like snow. So Rabbi Shmuel says, there's such an easier way. As soon as the Sar would reach the desert, ultimately, again, the string would turn white. So we'll say, again, why do the first two opinions reject Rabbi Yishmael? Why do they reject that? They know it's turned white. Right? So we'll say, I just want to point out, if I'm going to have time for it, we'll see. But this in and of itself is a fascinating machlokes about whether or not the string always turned white. There are conflicting accounts in the Gemara. There are accounts that seem to indicate that it always turned white, and accounts that we just saw 2 days ago that it didn't always turn white. But say, what I do want to draw your attention to is something absolutely amazing. According to Rabbi Shmuel, when did the string turn white? When did it turn white? When the Seir reached the Midbar. Very different than our previous understanding. We assume that when did the string turn white? When you pushed the goat off the cliff. So there is a machlokes. What's the svara to say that the string would turn white ultimately again when you got the goat to the midbar? Because we'll say what Rabbi Shmuel is saying is something dramatically amazing. If you think about part of the hashkafa of the Seir La'azazel, ultimately again is made up of two parts, the hashkafa, right? Number one is the journey. Number one is the journey. And the journey is the journey from Yerushalayim, from the Beis HaMikdash to the desert. Right? And then there's the tachlis, right? There's the finish line, which is what? Pushing the goat off the side of the cliff. Many times in life, we think that accomplishment is only felt when you push the goat off the cliff, right? Accomplishment is only when you cross the finish line, only when you reach the tachlis. And what Rabbi Shmuel is saying is, Klap Yishra'in Ha'ayzim HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Ribbono Shel Olam does not judge our life success based on crossing the finish line. He judges our life success based on a willingness to take the journey. And if you're willing to engage in the journey, if you're willing to leave the confines and the comfort of what you know and venture into the unknown in the pursuit of something greater, that's life accomplishment. And so if you're willing to leave the confines and the comfort of the Beis HaMikdash, and you're willing to journey out into the desert, you're willing to go ahead and push yourself harder to embrace some greater destiny, to embrace some greater unknown, as soon as you reach that desert, hitzlachto, you have accomplished. You have accomplished. Mission accomplished. Vaharaya, Rabbi Shmuel says, the string turns white not when you push the goat off the cliff. The string turns white when you get to the desert. An incredible, I will say, incredible yisayt. The Gemara says, Yagata umatsasa. Kadosh Baruch Hu just tells us, Yagata, all I want you to do is engage in the journey. All I want you to do is to try. I recognize you don't control the results. I recognize that you can't always succeed in getting the goat off the cliff. That is true. But you could always control whether or not you choose to leave Yerushalayim, whether you choose to leave your present confines, which are sometimes mediocre, and go into venture into something great and unknown. That I control. That I control. Whether I get the goat off the cliff, whether I accomplish, whether I cross the finish line, often I don't control. But whether I'm willing to engage in the journey, that is within us. Rabbi Shmuel says, the ultimate success of the Jew is a willingness to engage in the process, is a willingness to engage in the journey, is a willingness ultimately again to engage, to journey into the desert. Once you do that, the red string turns white. Incredible, incredible. Amar Abaye. Abaye says, Shema mino, beis chidudo bamidbar. Kaimo. So Abaye says, this beis chidudo that the Mishnah mentioned, this is the beginning of the desert. Ayvaha kamash malon de kasar Rabbi Yehuda, kevin shegiya sar le midbar, nasas mitzvah. So as we just said, Rabbi Yehuda holds that Allah lemaisa, once it's Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shmuel, once the goat gets to the desert, you have fulfilled the obligation. Shabbos says, an incredible idea that according to Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shmuel, it's the mitzvah of Seir La'azazel is fulfilled once you get to the midbar. Now, what does it mean that it's fulfilled? What it means is the Kohen Gadol has the ability to continue with the rest of the avodah of Yom Kippur once it reaches the desert. He doesn't have to wait until ultimately it's thrown over the cliff. I will say, and the truth is, we saw by the Seir La'azazel, we already saw this earlier, 2-3 days ago, the only part of the Seir La'azazel service that is ma'akev is what? Little chazara? Is the hagrala. Is the lottery. In other words, if something happens to the Seir La'azazel after the Hagrala, technically speaking, the obligation is fulfilled. But again, we want to ultimately get it to the desert. Once you get it to the desert, the mitzvah has been accomplished. In that, the Kohen Gadol has the ability to continue with the Avodah. And Abba say, again, feeds into that Hashkafic piece that we said before. The mitzvah of the Seir La'azazel is to venture from the known into the unknown. The mitzvah of the Seir La'azazel is to embrace your destiny by leaving the comforts of what you know and journeying into something else in the pursuit of some type of personalistic greatness and holiness. So once you leave Yerushalayim, and once you get into the desert, ultimately again, na'asis mitzvaso. Because I will say the most life-affirming lesson in Yiddishkeit is that all HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants from us is effort. He doesn't judge us by results because He knows better than anyone else that so often in life, I don't control the results. The only thing I control is a willingness to take the journey. The only thing I control is a willingness to expend the effort. Incredible. Hadron Alach Shnei Sir. I will say Mazel Tov. Mazel Tov, Mazel Tov. New parak. Bala Kohen Gadol Likros. Rabbi say now, continuing with the Avoda. The Kohen Gadol, Rabbi say now, this Kriya Satorah. Kriya Satorah. I'm sorry, by the way, I want to apologize in advance. There's no half Torah, so you'll have to wait for Kiddush until afterwards. I apologize about that. But Emirat Hashem, but no break, but Emirat Hashem Kriya Satorah. So Bala Kohen Gadol Likros. So the Kohen Gadol now comes to go ahead and engage in Kriya Satorah. Imratza Likros Bebeg Dei Botz Koreh. So I'll say, see now, here's what's interesting. Is we're going to see, what is this Kriyas HaTorah? Is this part of the Avoda, not part of the Avoda? So it's interesting, because the Mishnah says as follows. If he wants to read Bebig Dei Botz, Big Dei Botz, I will say, are his white linen clothing that he wears during the Avoda, Big Dei Kuhuna. So if he wants to wear his Big Dei Kuhuna, he wears Big Dei Kuhuna. Vimlav, and if he doesn't want to wear his Big Dei Kuhuna, Kori Be'itztelis Lavan Mishalo. He could wear his own white clothing. Right, he wears all my clothing. So, as well, say what's interesting over here is if he wants to wear a big day kunik or a big day kuna, if he wants to wear his own clothing, he wears his own clothing. Chazan Akneses, no tel sefer Torah, but no tel shakanes. Well, say, listen to this. So, the Chazan Akneses, so I will say the person in charge of the Beis HaKnesses. So I will say, if you look at Rashi says over here, Beis HaKnesses, Rashi says, Hayasamuch la'azara baharabayis. There was a shul. Ultimately, again, next to the Azara on the Har Habayis. Isn't that incredible? I want to tell you, I am applying for that job in Eretz Hashem, right? If they're looking for someone, I will say, can you imagine, right, having that shul over there, right? On the Har Habayis, the Young Israel of the Har Habayis, right? Whatever it is, right? Absolutely incredible. So there is a shul on that, which I will say also tells you something very interesting. Just about the, you ask yourself, why do they need a shul, right, outside of the Beis HaMikdash? So first of all, there's always somebody who's not going to daven somewhere, right? I don't daven here. So again, it is interesting. It tells you also about the role of a Beis HaKnesses. The Beis HaMikdash is not a Beis HaKnesses. They're two very, very different things. Again, not our topic for now, but it is fascinating that there is a Beis HaKnesses, there is a shul on the Har Habayis. So the Chazan HaKnesses, what does he do? Notel Sefer Torah. So they took the Sefer Torah. Venosel Rosh HaKnesses. He gives it to the Rosh HaKnesses. So we'll say, so the Chazan HaKnesses, Rashi says, the Shamish, right? This is the attendant. He gives the Sefer to the Rosh HaKnesses. Now we'll say, this is great. Who's the Rosh HaKnesses? Rashi says, Apiv Nechtach in Tzarchei HaKnesses. This is the most important guy in Shul because he decides what's going to happen in Shul. Mi maftir, who gets daf Torah, mi poris al shema, who davens for the amid, mi overlef ne'ateva, right? So I'll say, who is this? The gabbai, right? So some things haven't changed. The gabbai is the most important person in shul. Right? So he decides who gets all of the kibbudim. So the chazan, the shamish, gives the sefer Torah to the gabbai. The Rosh HaKnesses nosno the skan, and the gabbai gives it to the skan Kohen Gadol. Vaskan nosno the Kohen Gadol, and the skan gives it ultimately again to the Kohen Gadol. Say, if this sounds familiar, remember again, there's a similar Mishnah Meseches Megillah that also highlights what happened during Hakel, right? By Sukkot time, by the Kriya. Oh, in the year, it'll be next year, right? Because this year is a Shemitah year. In the year after Shemitah, they would do Hakel. So a very similar process was outlined. So the Skan would give it to the Kohen Gadol. The Kohen Gadol, Omidu Mekabel, the Kohen Gadol would stand up and receive the Sefer Torah. The Korei, and what would he read in the Sefer? Achrimos v'ach ba'asar. So what's he read? Achrimos, which again is the section of the Avoda, and Ach ba'asar in Parshas Emor, which is the section about Yom Kippur, v'golol sefer Torah u'maniach b'cheiko, and he would then roll up the sefer Torah after the Kohen Gadol read these two sections. We're going to see Abba say actually he read Achrimos from the sefer, and read the section of Ach Ba'asar in Emor, he read it Baal Peh. We'll see this. Then he rolls up the Sefer, Maniach Bechelk Becheiko, he holds the Sefer. So you have to imagine this scene, how moving it must have been. The Kohen Gadol, wearing his white clothing, whether it's Big Tikkun, his own clothing, he just did the Kriyas HaTorah, he rolled up the Torah, he's holding the Sefer Torah. Va'omer, Yosir Mimashe Karasi Ifnechem Kasuf Kan. There is more, much more than what I've read before you, that's written in this scroll. We'll see exactly what the meaning of that statement is. And I will say the section in Parshas Emor that outlines that goes through Yom Kippur, the sacrificial parts of Yom Kippur, he read that Baal Peh. Umevarech alei shmona brachas. He makes eight brachas, Rabbi Osai, on the Kriya. Ala Torah v'al ha'avoda. Again, we'll go through all of these brachas. A bracha on Torah, a bracha on avoda. Now, it's actually interesting. Rashi says over here, ala Torah is the bracha of Asher Nasan Lanu, which is the second bracha, the bracha we say after an aliyah. Ala avoda, which is the bracha of Ritzei. Ritzei, the bracha of Va'al Ha'oda, which is Modim, Va'al Mechilas Ha'avon, Macha La'avon Osil Miyam Kippurim Hazeh, the bracha that says, forgive us for all of our Averus, Va'al HaMikdash Befnei Atzmo, then there was a bracha for the Beis HaMikdash by itself, and there was a self-contained bracha for the Beis HaMikdash, Vi'al Yisrael b'fnei atzman and bracha for Klal Yisrael, Vi'al Yerushalayim b'fnei atzman for Yerushalayim. Also, we'll see all of these brachas in the Gemara. Vi'al Kohanim b'fnei atzman and ultimately again a bracha for the Kohanim as well. Vi'al Shar HaTfilah and ultimately again then there is a bracha for the remainder of Tfilah. We'll see again. Also, in the Gemara, we'll explain what all of these brachos are. After this, so the Gemara says Haroa Kohen Gadol Kishukorei Eino Roa Par B'Sar V'Nesrafim. We'll say if you saw the Kohen Gadol doing Kriyas HaTorah, you would not see, or you could not see the burning of the par and the sayer. And it's really va'aroa par v'sar nisrafin and ro'akoyin gadol shikore. And if you saw the par and sayer being burned, you could not see the Kohen Gadol doing the Kriyas HaTorah. V'lo mipnei shen arasha, both say, it's not because you're not allowed to. Both say, why if you saw one, could you not see the other? Why not? Can't dance at two chasanas, both say, right? Can't be in two places at the same time. At the end of the day, two different locations. The Gemara says, "Elo shehaisa derech rechoka umeleches shnehen shava ka'acha." So we'll say, ultimately, again, there are two different places. Remember, again, the burning of the parashah is outside of Yerushalayim. The reading of the Torah we're going to see was in the Esras Nashim, the major courtyard, and therefore you could not be in two places. Rabbi say, why isn't this intuitive? Isn't this intuitive? Right? Why do you have to mention this? Rabbi say, do you know what the Gemara is teaching us? Remember, there's hashkaf and everything. What is the Mishnah trying to teach us? Rabbi say, you can't have everything in life. You can't have everything. And whenever you choose A, by definition, you're sacrificing B. See, we don't like the word sacrifice, because sacrifice, you know, no one wants to have to give something up. But every time you make a decision, you're making a sacrifice. So if you chose to see the Kohen Gadol doing the Kriyas HaTorah, you could not see the part in the Sayer. And if you chose the part in the Sayer, you cannot go in and see the Kohen Gadol. Life is filled with choices. And whenever you choose one thing, you have to give up something else. Chazal teaching us, be careful what you choose and be careful what you give up. Because there is no such thing as a choice without a sacrifice. And all too often we make choices and we don't contemplate what we have to sacrifice as a result of that choice. And then we look back and we regret the decision because of what we had to sacrifice. Before you choose, think about what you're choosing, but also think about what you have to give up and make an informed decision. Says the Gemara, "Midiktani beitzdilas lavan mishelo michlal dekriya lava vodehi vekatani imratzalikros v'bigdeibutz kori shamas mina bigdeikuna nitu." So I'll say, listen to this. So the Gemara begins the discussion, which we'll have to continue into tomorrow. But I'll say the Gemara says the Mishnah is a bit enigmatic because the Mishnah says if the Kohen Gadol wants to wear his own clothing for the Kriyas HaTorah, he has the ability to do so. Right? Which sounds like what? The Kriya is not part of the Avoda. Because if the Kriya was part of the Avoda, then what would be the Halacha? What would be the Halacha? You must wear Big Dekun. In other words, we'll say there's no option. You have to wear Big Dekun for Avoda. The fact that it says he could even wear his regular clothing indicates to us that it's not an Avoda. Midik Tani Bits, this Lavan Mishalo, Mechlad de Kriya Lav Avodahi. Vikatani, yet the same Mishnah says, in Ratza Likros Bevigde Boots, Kore, that if he wants to go ahead and do the kriya with linen clothing, he has the ability to do so. So we'll say, which sounds like, even though reading is not an avodah, if he wants to wear big day kahuna, he has the right to do so. What do you see from this statement? Shamas mina, big day kahuna nitnu lehanos bahen. We'll say, it sounds like what? That you are permitted to go ahead and get hana from big day kahuna. Right? So we'll say, because remember, what does that mean? If you weren't allowed to get hana from big day kahuna, then what? Then what? Then Allah Chalamayin said, you shouldn't be able to wear them during the avodah. The fact that you can wear it during the avodah tells us that you're permitted to get hana from big day kahuna. We'll say, we'll stop over here. I'm going to leave you on that, on this question. We'll pick up. So we'll say, I just want to give you coming attractions tomorrow. Tomorrow, dramatically amazing daf. Dramatically, overwhelmingly amazing daf. An incredible Gemara. I'm not even going to tell you what it's about. That's how much I'm going to tease you with this. Tzviketi Rabosei, Shkoyach.
This opportunity to say I'm leaving you on a cliffhanger.
You know what?
You're like 2:40.
My colleague said it to me yesterday. So.